I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn, new American cuisine in one of Washington, D.C.'s oldest hotels, located in DuPont Circle. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Time for Lunch is a new podcast from HRN for curious young eaters, where we focus on the serious questions.
Aren't chickens tiny dinosaurs?
We get to know our favorite foods in unexpected ways.
We just like cheered like you would cheer for your classmate when they're rounding second base in softball. And we just like, peach, 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 peach. Yay, thank you, peaches.
Learn some new recipes and jokes.
What does a boxer's mom put in his lunch? A knuckle sandwich.
And load up on fun facts.
Experts estimate that there are between 1 and 2,000 types of insects eaten around the world.
So roll up your sleeves and dig in. Subscribe to Time for Lunch on your favorite podcast app so that you and your favorite young eater can catch up on the whole first season. New episodes of season 2 out each week.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. My name is Aaron Foster. I will be your host for today. And today is going to be the last day that I'll be your host as I go sort of emeritus and pass the torch on to the next generation of radio personalities. But I am pleased to have with me a friend and colleague, Laura Logos Downey. Laura is the co-owner, cheesemonger, Jane of all trades, cheese buyer of the Fairfield and Greenwich Cheese Company, as well as an e-commerce business which they do sort of subscription boxes called the Cheesemonger Box. Fairfield is just an amazing cheese shop, and it's founded by Laura and her partner Chris in 2009 in Fairfield, Connecticut, and just last year, if you've done the math already, celebrated their 10th anniversary in business. Which, if you listen to my show and you talk and you hear the dramas and tribulations behind the scenes, you know that's a pretty remarkable milestone. So they're this week we're really going to focus on what it's like to be a full service cheese shop in the time of COVID and what it's been like for Laura and what we sort of anticipate, what she anticipates, and the future looking like. Because we're going to call this show The Eye of the Storm. And I think that probably says a lot about where we're going. So, Laura, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Aaron. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So it's super exciting to talk to you. I've had a few different sort of we've done a number of shows with retailers, including with Ivy Ronquillo, who I know you know well, and and who is a dear friend of mine. And we've also done recently some shows. We last spoke to her after her first year in business and just before COVID started. And then after COVID, I did a show with Elena kind of talking about my experience. And then I brought on Mateo from Jasper Hill and Tyler from Roland Foods. But we haven't talked to another retailer since the beginning of COVID. So if you want to sort of take a few minutes and just, yeah, I know there's so much to talk about, but why don't you tell us how you're feeling, how you're doing, and give us the lay of the land as it exists now.
Yeah, well, like everybody else, it's been a ride for sure. Right now, this moment, I'm feeling pretty good. Chris and I feel pretty settled. The shops are sort of humming along. we're doing our thing. Everything's working. It's a far cry from how it felt in March, where we thought the world might be, you know, crashing in on us and had no idea what any of this was going to mean for our business.
It was terrifying, wasn't it?
It was truly terrifying. I don't think I slept for a whole week when I realized that we were probably going to have to, you know, lock customers out of the store. And, you know, how were we going to, you know, what was really interesting is that we started 2020 on a really, you know, just positive note. Business was really good in January and February, and we were trending like better than we have usually in any January or February. And it felt great. You know, we were up significantly even in our Fairfield store, which is the more mature store, and we were feeling really good.
You have the wind at your backs.
We had the wind at our backs for once.
Right.
You know, we were really feeling good. And then, you know, we started hearing rumblings in early March about COVID. And then interestingly enough, our lead monger, Matthew, and I had made a run up to Jasper Hill Farm the week before we closed down.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, we went up to select some cheese, meet with the folks up there. We selected some amazing cheeses. And then, you know, just for a couple of days, and then came back down, and it was probably a week and a half later, we were shutting the doors to the store. So we went from, you know, selecting cheese to closing within a 2-week period. So it's been a little bit, you know, it had been a little bit stressful, still kind of stressful, to be honest, but things have definitely stabilized. So, you know, plus we were going into the Easter, sort of spring Easter holidays, which typically are, you know, pretty good for us. So I was super worried about how we were going to do Easter with, you know, no customers in the shop. So we pivoted right to curbside and online ordering. I spent about 3 days frantically putting our cheese case online. Our online presence before had just been pretty, you know, pretty small. You could ship a gift box. You could order a cheese platter online, but that was pretty much it. And our online sales were really nothing. It was never a major channel for us at all. But we realized that we only had one phone line in each store. So we figured we better put in some kind of online ordering system. So
yeah. Did your phones just blow up?
Yeah. Once we closed the door and I communicated that, you know, we were no longer going to be open for walk-in traffic. You know, I realized we had to give them a way to shop, obviously. So you know, I spent 3 days putting the catalog online and then sort of communicated that it was there to our customers. Our, you know, I've learned a couple of things about the pandemic or being pandemic ready. I feel like there's so many.
I want to hear these. Let me get my pen out. Go on.
Yeah. So the number one thing that I was most grateful for was our email list.
Interesting. You know,
people talk about email marketing all the time, and it's something we've always done. And we've been collecting emails pretty much since the first day we opened, you know, from various ways like in shop, but also, you know, online sign up forms, Facebook sign up forms, Cheese School. Like anytime someone comes to Cheese School, they end up on our list. So our list has become, you know, it was sort of gold. And honestly, I credit the email list with really keeping us afloat. That and the constant study of social media. So, you know,
right.
Social media is this thing that just everybody, you know, it's hard. It's hard to keep up with it. It's hard to do it. And I do actually do the social media myself for both stores.
You mean you don't have a social media attaché working for you on the TikTok making videos?
No, No, I wish I did.
Really how old but, both of us are, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've been plugging away at it for years. And, you know, we have okay engagement on social media. But once we closed our doors, it really, I could see pretty quickly how that email list and our social media presence, how I could use those things to sort of help keep us going. So we have, you know, we did that. We relied on that. We leaned right on into it. And I communicated with our customers and our, you know, local base, just exactly what was going on pretty much, you know, a couple of times, you know, every day on social media. And then I started sending, you know, a newsletter at least once a week, one to two wow. times a week.
Yeah. So just for comparison for us, we don't really do a ton with email marketing. I've had negative experiences with email marketing just in general over the years. And I mean, the anxiety that I experience pressing the big MailChimp button to send out emails, I just am paranoid that a link is wrong or I've said something incorrect or mispriced something. And,
yeah,
or that I've sent the wrong list. Yeah.
Yeah. You just kind of have to get over that.
I know. Right. And I never, ever have. So we send perhaps like 3 emails a year.
Yeah.
And we've also seen, you know, our engagement on by email isn't so great. Whereas Instagram is much better. Like people just, that's how they get information about the store. They would go to Instagram before they would go to our website. And I imagine that's probably a function of age and sort of demographic difference between your customers and ours.
Yeah, probably. You know, we're in the suburbs, so our, you know, average customer is definitely older than probably city Brooklyn customers for sure.
Right. Our average customer is definitely under 30, I would say.
Yeah, ours is probably high 30s to 50 something.
Gotcha.
So, yeah. But, you know, before the pre-pandemic or pre-COVID, we you know, I would do a newsletter, not quite weekly, maybe every other week. And our open rate was pretty decent, actually. It was like around 20% or so on average.
That's very decent.
Which everyone says is decent. I don't know. I don't know much about marketing. But what I do know is that apparently that was good. So during the pandemic, when everybody was home and I started communicating a little bit more with email, our open rate shot up to close to 30%.
Yeah, I mean that in my, we've never had a rate that high.
So, you know, so for me, that was definitely how I knew that, you know, talking to our customers, telling them exactly what was going on. And I didn't really sugarcoat anything with them either. I didn't pretend everything was okay. I was brutally honest with them. And I think it sort of paid off.
This is something that's super interesting.
I'd
love for you to, because we talked about this briefly in getting ready for the show, and I didn't mean to interrupt you there, but I would love you to kind of highlight this because I think it's just so interesting. You know, you talked about how you didn't exactly give your customers an ultimatum, but you really spelled out what it meant for customers to shop with you versus, say, a large retailer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, my first email when we announced that we were going to close our doors and move to, you know, curbside pickup only, you know, I was sort of brutally honest with them and said, I don't know what this is going to mean for our business. And sort of pointed out to them that we really needed their support. And, you know, at the same time, there was a lot of communication from cheesemakers who were really starting to struggle and freaking out about how they were going to, you know, they're all making cheese and no one's buying it. And there aren't very many outlets, you know, when they lose all those restaurant accounts. I really took to heart their pleas, being a cheese shop that does sell mostly cut to order cheese, that I had sort of a obligation to really try and help them the best I could as well. And I communicated their plight to our cheesemakers, you know, to our customers, and also to, you know, just
anyone that would listen, basically.
Anyone that would listen. So on social media, I did it through the newsletter, and they really, really answered the call. Like, they came in and specifically, you know, would call us and say, well, what, you know, what Vermont cheese do you have? You know, anything local? Like, they were really, you know, taking up the cause.
That's great. It was so hard to figure out how to support cheesemakers early on. And, you know, that you hear these sort of plaintive cries from people that you respect and love and that you've worked with for years that are suffering, and you want to help them. But you also, I think I can speak for both of us when I say the bandwidth was pretty tight when we were in the thick of it. And, you know, I certainly felt obligated to try to help myself before anyone else and help my staff. But it was, it's amazing that you were able to turn that need into like effectively a call to action for your customers.
Yeah, it really, really worked. So, I mean, I think that the fact that I've had that communication with them from the beginning, you know, whether it's through the newsletter or just in general, sort of our whole customer service, you know, our mantra, so to speak,
our ethos.
Yes. And also, you know, our cheese school classes. So, you know, Chris and I have been doing those classes for over 10 years. So the relationships with our customers that we've developed through those classes are pretty, pretty deep. And, you know, the minute I expressed any kind of sort of fear and dismay about the business and then also about our producers, they actively just fell in line and have been so supportive over the last couple of months, you know, to the point where we... Yeah, I was going to say just to the point where we're fairly stable as a business right now.
Yeah, that was where I was going to go next. But it also, I think, like to distill the lesson or distill the kind of kernel here. It feels like if you're there for your customers and engaged with them all along, when the rubber meets the road and things get kind of hairy, you can. You know, you've built up enough goodwill and enough relationships that you can lean on them and they'll be there for you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think that's what's gotten us through.
Something I've talked about a lot as the sort of thing that differentiates small retailers, the way that we sort of hold our own against the Walmarts and Amazons of the world is customer service and relationship building and curation. And, you know, we're never going to be the cheapest. We're never going to have the widest selection or the best delivery apparatus. But we can tell you all about the cheese to the point that you've gone up and selected the cheese right before the pandemic. And
exactly.
And you have those relationships going back years. So.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, I think that is a huge lesson for, I mean, I think that's a good lesson for any small business. Definitely a good lesson for an independent cheese shop is how important those relationships, you know, with your customers are. And quite frankly, your relationship with your producers as well, because, you know, if I didn't care about those producers, my customers wouldn't care about those producers. So I think it's all really important.
Well, I think that's a positive thing to take out of all of this, that those relationships, whether, sort of calamities such as the one we're experiencing. You guys are more or less hitting projections for what you were expecting for this year in spite of the pandemic, or are you up or down? And I'll just, not to put you on the spot, like Foster Sundry is up over last year. We started out the year kind of comping more or less what we projected, roughly the same as we had last year by percentage. And then we had a couple of really rough weeks at the beginning of the pandemic. And then, at the very beginning, we had amazing sales because I think people didn't know what was happening and they really wanted to fill their larders with fancy pasta and Parmesan and canned tomatoes.
Yeah.
And then we had several rough weeks that caused us to to question whether it was all worth it. And then we kind of evened out into like a stable, people were buying, spending different amounts of money, buying different things. We had way fewer customers, but they were buying more. So what's been, tell us where you're at.
Yeah. So, you know, it's so interesting. I was looking at the numbers today, just quickly to see sort of where we are. And we're definitely up over last year. We're not up as much as I would have, as I thought. I would say Fairfield's up like 10 to 15% overall. Greenwich is up like 20% overall. But where we're really up is online sales.
Right.
So I was looking at our online sales last year versus this year so far, and we're up 500%.
Holy moly. This is basically what Bree was saying on Elena's show, which was just like, you know, we all going into this, we all kind of have cobbled together versions of an e-commerce experience, if that wasn't something that we had specialized in, but none of us really, I always think of it as more of a pain in the ass than a revenue driver. And this pandemic seems to have very much dramatically changed that model.
Yeah, I think it definitely has. And I think that, you know, for now, it's definitely here to stay. And I think it's forcing some of us to really look at it. You know, I never spent that much time on it because I really figured, you know, the bigger guys sort of had that covered, right? You know, am I going to compete on online sales with Murray's? Am I going to compete with Zingerman's? Absolutely not. They're behemoths in that space. You know, we sold some gift baskets online, you know, more as a service for our customers in the shop who wanted to send something to their mother or their sister. You know, they wanted to share our store specifically with their friends and family. So that's why we did that. It was never anything we, you know, really pushed because shipping cheese, as we all know, is really hard and it's hot and it's, you know, expensive. It's super, super expensive. So, you know, it's not something I was really jumping up and down to, you know, count on as a sales channel. You know, our bread and butter is cut to order cheese in our shops. The one thing I did take a quick look at is that, you know, I think Fairfield and Greenwich Cheese is a little bit unique even in the independent cheese shop scene. You know, over pre-pandemic, about 52% of all our sales is cut to order cheese.
Wow, that is quite unique.
Yeah,
this is very the dirty unique. Secret of cheese shops, like cut to order cheese shops in America is. Every cheese shop that you know is far less a cheese shop than it is a sandwich shop or a grocery store.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And
ours,
you know, and that
10% maybe.
Right. And that's something, you know, that portion of the business is that way because that is what we wanted it to be. I didn't want to be a cafe. I never didn't want to, you know, make people lunch all day. It just was not what we wanted to do as a business from the beginning. So we fought and clung to our original mission. And you know, I think in a sense, we've proven it can be done. It's super hard to do. And, you know, I do think we give up, you know, probably revenue because we don't do the other things. But when I took a look to see what our year to date cheese sales are compared to, you know, last year it was almost 53%. And this year, from January to now is 60% has been cut to order.
That's wild.
Which that really surprised me. I mean, I knew that like we've been selling a lot of, you know, big chunks of cheese. Like people are coming in and buying Parmigiano, like, every week they're coming to buy it, which, you know, before they would buy it maybe once a month or once every other week.
They got to put something on all that pasta that they stockpiled.
Exactly. And Gruyere, it's like I can't keep Gruyere in stock. It's insane.
I know, it's so strange.
So, you know, so it's funny, you know, one of the questions you had asked me was about, you know, has the pandemic changed our business? And I don't really think it's changed what we do. We've been doing the same thing since we opened, and that's selling cheese, you know, cut to order by a cheesemonger, you know, from the beginning. And we sort of have just stuck to that because I think that's at this point the only thing we know how to do. You know, our small, tiny bit of restaurant business obviously dried up for a while. A couple of them have come back. I mean, and when I mean small, I mean, like, we sell cheese to like 6 restaurants,
right?
Locally. And then, you know, that's about it. We don't really have a ton of sales channels, in our shop. So really this whole, you know, cut to order cheese.
Do you do delivery?
No. So again, we don't really have that capability. You know, my husband, if he's around, I'll sometimes, like if it's in Fairfield, I'll have him, you know,
deliver. Send him out.
Yeah. Send him out, deliver a gift basket for us. But we really don't do local delivery. You know, that's something in the fall that I think we would only do it like within Fairfield and within Greenwich. You know, we might add that to the mix or maybe find a delivery service that doesn't take too much money. I don't know. They seem to be fine coming to pick up curbside.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if it's interesting that this is a difference. While we're both in the Northeast, and I feel like the pandemic affected Connecticut, New York, roughly, you know, the same kind of intensity. In Connecticut, you can hop in your car and you're in a bubble and you can drive somewhere and have something, somebody put something in your trunk or whatever, and then drive home. New York, you can't really do that.
Exactly. And that's what, you know, they did. They weren't really screaming for delivery. I would imagine in the city, like you kind of got to figure out delivery.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely didn't. We really struggled with that. And the analogy I've used repeatedly is like trying to build to repair a car while it's moving.
Yeah.
And we really struggled with that. But it's something that we're now sort of taking this lull in the storm to, or this eye in the storm, I should say, if I'm going to continue with the analogy, and, to try and use this time effectively to prepare for the next round.
Yeah.
And maybe this is a good time to just stop, now that we're at kind of an inflection point, and take a quick moment to hear from our sponsors. So again, this is Cutting the Courage on the Heritage Radio Network. We're going to take a moment to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back with Laura Logostoni of Fairfield Greenwich Cheese Company. All right, thanks. Stick around.
This episode is brought to you by Tabard Inn. Tabard Inn, Washington, D.C.'s quintessential hotel, is located on a quiet, tree-lined street just 5 blocks from the White House. Vibrant yet unassuming, the Tabard is comprised of 40 sleeping rooms, each unique in character and design. Feast on an eclectic American cuisine in their acclaimed restaurant, or enjoy a cocktail and listen to live jazz in one of their cozy Victorian seating areas. Mingle with travelers from around the world who find the Tabard the only place to stay when taking their travels to Washington. For more information, visit tabardinn.com.
Hello, welcome back to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I am your host, Aaron Foster, here with Laura Logostoni of the Fairfield and Greenwich Cheese Shops and the Cheesemonger Box. So we kind of left it there, discussing sort of where, you know, looking backwards, let's say. But maybe let's kind of pivot, look at now, and then try to look forward. And one thing I sort of regret or missed asking you is, you guys staying healthy, your staff staying healthy, everyone okay?
Yeah, so far everyone's been fine. We've had a couple people get tested because they hadn't been feeling well and everyone was negative, much to our relief.
Right.
But yeah, everyone's been fine. You know, everyone on our staff's really taking precautions. No one is, you know, going to the bars. No one's traveling. Everyone's been really, really cooperative. You know, basically, we were pretty clear that they needed, if they wanted to be able to work and come to work, that they had to follow all the guidelines, and that we would prefer that they were social distancing and not going out with tons of friends. You know, it's been a little more challenging since things have opened up a little bit.
Yes, I found that as well.
A little more movement around, but you know, I've reminded them a couple of times, and you know what? They've really all been awesome. Most of them just really don't want to catch it.
Right, so, it's terrifying, and yeah, I don't know if your staff skews younger. Mine does, and we definitely had one person who was. We have periodic meetings where we sort of talk about the fact that the risk that you take is not simply a risk for yourself, but it's a risk for everyone that you work with as well.
Yeah, exactly.
We've agreed as a group, as a small group, but as a dedicated group that we are effectively potting together, and it's a shared risk profile. And that requires a level of responsibility that is above and beyond. And some people need that lesson a couple times. And so I had one staff member go out a couple weeks ago sick, and if I was to have guessed who would misbehave, it would have been this person. And so we were scared, but turned out to be food poisoning. And, tested and came back negative. We do have several employees. We have one employee that went out sick, was not confirmed, but because there was a time when there was no testing, but was out for over 6 weeks
and got
very sick. That was like early March, before, you know, when things were really scary and unknown. And then we have several employees that have tested positive for antibodies, but have never experienced symptoms. So,
Well, that's, you know, that's basically what we've done too. And, you know, honestly, most of our staff, like, they've all sort of expressed they're really happy that everyone still has a job, you know, because they were feeling the stress too back in March when we didn't know what was going to happen. Like, for all we knew, like, no one was going to come buy cheese,
right?
And that the whole shop could be at risk. So they took it really seriously. And I think they've all been working so hard and, you know, under weird conditions. You know, it's mentally tiring to wear a mask all day. And, you know, now that we're letting people back in the shop, you feel a little bit like a police officer in the shop. You know, did you use the sanitizer? You know, are they wearing a mask? Please don't reach over the counter. You know, you kind of, it's a little, operating like this is a little exhausting, which is why we actually did reduce our hours a little bit. So both shops are now just open from 10 to 6, Monday through Saturday, which we used to be open till 7, and Fairfield was open till 8 on Friday and Saturdays. So, you know,
and this is a response to, like, just, I mean, does that, mm-hmm. Would you say that, I mean, it's obviously a cost saving measure and a safety measure, but in my experience, people are just spending more time at home and not out as late.
Yeah. Well, we noticed that for sure, but I think a lot of it just had to do with, you know, how we were all feeling and working a full day under these, you know,
right.
Just
getting
out of work
days.
Getting out of work at 6, being home by 6:30, you know, 7:15 is a lot nicer than being home at 7:30, 8:15. And it really hasn't hurt our business at all. So, you know, sales are fine. So I think everyone's really appreciative of that. And like I said, they've all worked so hard. So we really appreciate them at the moment.
Are you experiencing, I'll just come out and we are extremely pro-mass. And, you know, we don't really have a lot of patience for COVIDiots that, that just refuse to wear a mask or accuse us of playing into the scamdemic or the plannedemic, as we've both heard.
Yes.
I was just, please go on.
I was just going to say, you know, out here in the suburbs, we've all been really compliant. We have had very few people, you know, a couple of people got a little upset when I asked them to pull the mask all the way up over their nose. You know, overall though, our customers have been super respectful. We're pretty much a, you know, no mask, no service kind of place.
Yes.
At this point, it's posted, it's been social media, it's newslettered, it's, you know, everyone has really complied really nicely. So we haven't really had much trouble out here.
I had two people today alone that I had to ask to leave because they weren't wearing masks. And a FedEx driver.
Oh, but, that's lame.
That's right. Super lame. And it's the second time in a week. But it's funny. I go back and I just happened to, I was wondering how I had approached this in the, and I went back and looked at my first communication on COVID, which was on March 1st to my staff. And I said, don't wear a mask at work and I won't be buying a mask for myself and we should save them for medical professionals and they're not that useful. And I was so wrong on that point, but
well, we were going by what they were telling us.
So. We were. I linked to the CDC and I linked to other places, the New York Times, but so interesting.
Yep.
So what do you, you know, I think we'll come back now to the title of the show, which is The Eye of the Storm. And I've used this, maybe I've beaten a dead horse a bit, but I really do feel it feels right now like we have this sort of temporary reprieve in New York City and in the tri-state area where, you know, we faced the worst of it first. And I include Connecticut, New Jersey in that, like we, you know, all of us together, just, it was rough. And now we see all these sort of infections spreading out across the country and obviously, and sort of, predictably affecting areas that didn't have high trust in government and that didn't have high trust in mask wearing and safety measures. And, you know, it's coming around to bite them in the butt. But I, you know, that said, like our initial infections went there and it only stands to reason that those infections will bounce back and hit us like a drunk man peeing against a wall. So I guess I wonder, like, are you, you know, what kind of things are you doing to prepare and to set things up for the next round?
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty much the first, like, I'm thinking about that every day. I would say the biggest thing we're working on right now is a brand new website, which, you know, is always expensive and not always, you know, something I jump up and down to do. But I did realize pretty quickly that, you know, our online ordering system was very much, you know, patchwork and not the best experience for the customer. And quite frankly, not a very great experience for us on the other end when we were pulling the orders and trying to fill them. It just was really clunky, a really clunky system because it really wasn't meant for online shopping. You know, we just hobbled it together in an emergency kind of situation. So, you know, thinking about what is it going to be like fourth quarter, you know, because we all sort of know at this point that we're going to be operating like this for at least probably the next year. Realistically.
Yeah. I mean, this is what you're saying, the dirty word sort of, but it is the truth that we're all acknowledging.
It is the truth. And so, you know, so what can we do to make the experience better? And definitely the first thing, you know, that we looked at was the website, and its clunkiness. So we hope to have a new website up by the end of August, early September, with, you know, much better you know, shopping experience for customers. It'll be like when we have to ship anything, it'll, you know, we won't have to create separate FedEx labels in another system. We'll be able to just, you know, automatically create shipping labels, you know.
You'll generally increase efficiency and hopefully increase sort of conversion and finally lean into the website in a more meaningful way.
Exactly. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing that we're just starting to work on now, like over the next couple of months, is really trying to, you know, help our staff with the language of cheese. So, you know, we're not sampling, right? So,
right.
You know,
yes, of course.
At all. And, you know, we rely heavily in our shop on sampling to sell cheese. So, you know, having to describe a cheese to somebody is the whole, you know, without using the exact same words every single time, you know, it's nutty.
It's nutty. Like, oh, it's sharp.
It's you know, we're all describing texture more than we're describing flavor, you know, so all of that. So we're going to try and do some training sessions. We have our first one next week with Doug Jacknick from Columbia Cheese.
Oh, nice.
And he's going to help us work on that with our staff, especially some of our newer staff. You know, we have a couple people that sort of started right as this was all happening. I have one person that's never sold cheese any other way. Actually, two people.
Wow.
Who have never sold cheese any other way. Could you imagine? It's crazy. So working on that and trying helping them, you know, trying to help them get some language. Even our more seasoned people, you know, really getting to think about how they're describing things to customers. You know, we're all still tasting. We do that pretty much daily and every week when we reset the cheese cases, so we all know what everything is. But,
well, and I would argue that tasting, you know, is even more important now, given that you know the customer can't taste it. So you're taking on all of the burden. You can't just, sometimes the easy way out is to just say, here, try this, and you know, let them make the call. Like, now, you know, you bear the full burden of trying to communicate what this tastes like and what I've always sort of fondly called cheese divination, just trying to kind of suss out a customer and figure it out. Yeah. I think tasting is hugely important right now. And we are obviously doing the same thing, not offering samples and basically trading on our customers' trust.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've been trading on that this whole time, really. And, you know, like I said before, they've answered the call and they do put their trust in us. But, you know, I want to be able to make sure that the customer experience doesn't suffer too much. So really trying to come up with the right language and just in describing it to them, I think would be really valuable as we move into the fall, into the fourth quarter.
Yeah, I think that's really smart.
I'm going with the whole, you know, possibility that we might have to like literally lock the doors again. So and if we don't, you know, we're still limited to the amount of people in the store. So, you know, leaning heavily into this curbside pickup and the online ordering, I think is, you know, where most of our prep is going to be.
Yeah, we are also sort of just operating on the assumption that things are going to close down. And while we are considered an essential business, you know, the more we can do to protect our staff and customers from each other going into the next round, that's kind of where we're at. And, you know, we never closed up here to customers at all. We didn't do curbside. We took calls from people and did our best to help out, but we really encouraged people to come in, but limiting it to six people in at a time and doing all the things that we're supposed to be doing. But I think this kind of brings me into my last question, which is just, you know, do you feel like Amazon, Walmart, Wegmans, Whole Foods, these guys all have a head start insofar as they have a well-developed infrastructure for online grocery retail. And I feel like a lot of our customers come to us for, and when I say our, I mean yours and mine, come to us for the customer service experience and for the curation and for the quality. My fear is that the sort of danger of shopping and the danger and difficulty and inconvenience and expense of shopping with a small retailer now that we don't offer enough to keep people shopping with us, and that eventually the pandemic will push people into the arms of larger retailers because they're better equipped to handle, say, curbside or touchless, contactless deliveries and orders and things.
Yeah, you know, I don't know. We always, you know, Chris always says, just let's keep doing what we've been doing. You know, that's always sort of his, you know, unofficial motto, and not worry too much about what those big box retailers are doing. You know, we're never going to compete with them on price, but like you said, we definitely can outcompete them on quality of cheese, the care of the cheese, you know, the customer service, the knowledge. You know, we quite frankly, you know, here have outcompeted our local Whole Foods, no problem. Like, our cheese selection is way better. Their cheese selection, you know, is very small at this point, because our customers really, you know, value those things. So my hope is that some of the consumer behavior might shift. Well, it's, you know, we found that it has shifted.
Right. I think sort of the opposite of what I'm postulating.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it might be the opposite of that. I think that, you know, what do we always say? We always say, you know, once you taste really good cheese, it's super hard to go back to the grocery store cheese. And, you know, even though some of those stores might occasionally carry something similar to what we have, ours inevitably is always going to taste better.
Right.
And they're always going to get exactly what they want from us. You know, it's never a pre-cut. It's always how much, you know, how little or how big they want. I think they can taste the difference in freshly cut cheese. And I think that, you know, during this whole pandemic, you know, we've seen our cut to order cheese sales increase. And I'm hoping that that is going to stick. I think that consumer behavior, you know, maybe to our surprise, might be a permanent change, that once they've enjoyed it and experienced it, and on top of that, they really have wanted to support small and local businesses. You know, the media has done a pretty good job out there of talking about, you know, all the small restaurants and the independent shops needing support, and people have answered that call. So I don't think that they're going to just all of a sudden say, oh, this pandemic's driving me crazy, I'm just going to go to Walmart. You know?
Sure.
And I think it's going to stick. I'm hoping.
I mean,
I like
that. I revel and relish the optimism. I'm a cynic on this point, and maybe it's different because I live in New York and I've watched the sort of convenience shoppers. I mean, even my wife, right? She shops on Instacart or Fresh Direct because I can't be relied upon necessarily to bring the exact type of grocery home that she might need. And that, like, working professionals, you know, look for a certain level of convenience, and that's worth sacrificing a certain level of quality or what have you. But my hope is there's enough of those people that you're describing out there to keep us in business.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is. I think there is.
Well, my very, very last question is, I just wanted to sort of spend a moment thinking on our friends in Texas and in Florida and in California that are now kind of, you know, not necessarily with the population density, but certainly with like the number of cases, are finding themselves in the same place we found ourselves in March, April, and May. Do you have any advice for store owners there? Anything specific that, you know, you want to point out, and any words of wisdom that you might be able to share?
Yeah, I think depending on what your shop model is, you know, is definitely going to have an influence on what you are going to do and how you can survive. You know, I think like the shops that are heavily on that sort of cafe model are probably struggling a little bit more to pivot and find, they have to come up with more innovative ways, you know, to sort of fill the gap, right? Of when, you know, the margin on a cheese plate and the glass of wine that someone would come in and have, or the sandwich that they take out, you know, for lunch. So I think for shops that are sort of that model, you know, I would encourage everybody to really lean in and start getting the message out there, you know, whether people are cooking with cheese and just getting them to buy more cut to order cheese. You know, I think shops can make it on cut to order cheese, but you have to be really proactive in delivering the message to customers. You know, I've seen some of them do these amazing, you know, sort of cheese plates to go where they're making boxes. And like, I think that kind of pivoting and innovation is really going to help them. You know, the shops that are more, you know, sell more cut to order cheese than cafe, you know, I would, you know, say like Chris, you know, keep doing what you're doing. You know, I think overall everyone's doing okay. So, you know, I know there have been a few shop closures, you know, whether they're COVID related or they were coming down the pike anyway. You know, it's hard to say. But, you know, as a group, I think we all have to fight pretty hard to stay in business.
Right. On a good day.
On a good day. But I've seen a lot of shops do amazing things. You know, the Antonelli's down in Texas have their event programming has been through the roof. I think that has really helped sustain them, you know, because they had a huge restaurant business that sort of evaporated. So they really needed to pivot onto more events. Yeah, to fill the holes. And, you know, Louise down in Sarasota, Florida. You know, she's in a real hot zone there. And, you know, she's opened and closed and reopened and then closed the door again. But, you know, I think like us, she has a really strong customer base and a really loyal customer base. So, you know, as long as she keeps messaging them, I think, you know, she'll be fine too. We just have to keep doing it.
Keep doing it. Yeah, exactly.
You know.
Well, I mean, I think that's a message largely of optimism that I think we can leave it at. Laura, it was so great to have you on, and I really, really appreciate you kind of sharing your experience and your time with us. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Okay, listeners. Well, that's it for this show. Thank you again to Laura Downey of Fairfield Advantage Cheese, and thank you so much for tuning in and listening to my shows. This is going to be my last show of the summer season, and as a regular contributor, but I wouldn't be surprised to pop in now and again as an alumnus with something fun for you. So again, thanks for listening to Cutting the Curd. My name is Aaron Foster. We'll see you later.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter @heritage_radio You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat & 3 is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah. And my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.